Welcome to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch, Episode 6, covering Fallen Angel and Eve. I'm your host, Darren, and with me is Baz Greenland. How are you, Baz?
Hi. Good, thank you.
Cool. This is I think, your second round. You've done one of these before. This is my first time doing a Podwatch. It's going to be fun.
Okay, yeah. This is my second Podwatch, this one, yeah.
It's going to be fun. It's a remarkably sort of ambitious thing that I think Tony's doing, where it's like trying to cover two episodes a day for over 100 days. Obviously, there being 200 episodes, it's amazing. It'll be fun, and it's kind of cool to be jumping on there.
Definitely. I think the challenge is going to be keeping it quite short, I think.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you get people talking about the X-Files, it's going to be hard to sort of compress it down and get it sort of keeping it within talking 10 minutes to an episode at a time. But I think it's we're lucky in that, like, at the start, I think the first season lends itself to that. I think that once you hit the second and third season, that's when you're going to hit the sort of speed bumps, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. When you start talking mythology later on, I think you're going to be struggling. I'm going to be talking the season 3 mythology one, so that'll be interesting to see.
Oh, they are. And there's so much, and there's so much to talk about. And, yeah, I say that now. We say that at the start of this recording, before what will probably end up being a good hour and a half that we'll actually end up covering. No, we won't. It'll be 10 minutes in and out. So with that in mind, let's jump sort of right into this and sort of talk about the two episodes in question. So first of all, let's talk about Fallen Angel, which aired in November 1993, sort of roughly halfway through the first season. It aired directly after Space. So, you know, it has that going for it. I think
it's better, yes.
The first thing you think when you watch Fallen Angel is that it was much better than Space. And it is actually, it's really, really good. It's written by Howard Gordon, Alex Ganza. And it, in some ways, could be argued to be one of the early mythology episodes, I think.
Well, I think it is. It's got a lot in there. I mean, it's got Max, who kind of feels a bit like a proto-Lone Gunman. And it's got that kind of military versus Mulder vibe going on, and Deep Throes in it as well. And I think it does have a lot of themes going on around the kind of government cover-up of aliens that really does kind of become more apparent as the show goes on.
It really does. It sets up this idea that, I mean, obviously, you know, dating back to the pilot and Deep Throat, where you've actually been here a very long time. But you do have this sense that it's an institutional thing, that it's not like aliens arrived and the government is sort of aware of it. It's no, the aliens have arrived, and the aliens, as the government, are actively engaged with that. You know, there's, and I love this, Colonel Henderson, who is the character who appears here, is a wonderful character, but I particularly love his introduction, where he's sort of sitting in Cheyenne Mountain, and presumably sitting at a desk, sitting there all day, every day, for the one occasion that it happens that a UFO comes on radar.
Yeah.
I love the idea that he's just there to wander over and to tell people that what they saw definitely wasn't a UFO. Like, you know, there's entire rotations of people who are like, what the hell does that guy do in the corner? And it's like, no. Did you get that bagel from the kitchen? He's like, no, it was a piece of toast. And that's what your report will reflect. But yeah, no, it is. It's very, and it moves incredibly fast as well.
Mm. It's really kind of a fast-paced thriller, isn't it? Because it's got that kind of, it's like the speed, the way the alien moves and Mitch trying to hunt it down. Everything from Mulder's mission, I think the fact that it's kind of his early discussion with the kind of setup with Deep Throat, it's told in flashback, means it goes straight into the action. And that's what I like about it. It's a very fast-paced mythology episode, which I guess for some mythology episodes is quite odd because they could be quite slow at times. But no, it's kind of a rush from beginning to end, but it's got a really good pace to it as well. It doesn't feel that, maybe because it's season one and there's still a lot of story to be told, it doesn't feel like they rush the story either.
Like, one of the things that's remarkable about The X-Files, I think, in terms of 90s television, is how it's directed and put together in terms of its visual storytelling. I think even you get that in the, like, in the teaser to this, and as you notice in the opening scenes where everything is done in flashbacks. So you begin with Mulder already investigating. But even when you begin with, like, you begin with the craft having already crashed and the sheriff investigating and cutting back and forth to the military as they're watching it go down, it's like, even though it's not being explained what's happening, it's like it's moving very, very quickly, and you can get the sense of the feel of what's happening without knowing exactly what's happening. And I really, really like that. It's Howard Gordon would go on to become, you know, the X-Files stable of writers, hugely influential in terms of television. He'd go on to work on 24 and Homeland. And I think you can see a bit of that here, like just in terms of momentum.
Yeah, you can almost imagine the 24 clock ticking down as it goes on, because it is a kind of a pace, absolutely. One other thing as well, talk about mythology as well, is what really surprised me on kind of rewatch is it's only episode 10. And we've already got them talking about shutting down the X-Files, which obviously comes before the end of the season. So they don't really kind of, you think of it kind of as a bit of X-Files took their time to layer the story, but actually we're already 10 episodes in and we're kind of building up towards the finale.
Yeah, and there's a sense that, yeah, this is where Carter sort of wants to go with it. Like, one of the things that I like about the first season, and like it's very common to say that like the mythology wasn't fully formed the first season, because there are a lot of continuity issues here. Like, I mean, one wonders, like, when they're talking about racing to recover Max and all this sort of stuff, how it fits in with colonization and the project and the cigarette-smoking man, who doesn't even appear here, for example. But I think that it's more that Carter has a feel for the stories he wants to tell with the show. Like, I think that Max Fennec, you mentioned that he's a proto-lone gunman character, and he definitely is. But he's also, like, he's the first person, I think, he's one of the first people you meet in the series, and it happened in Conduit as well, which is also written by Howard Gordon. He's a character who's been victimized and abused and marginalized. He's a character who people write off as a crank. He has these psychological issues that it's implied are a result of, you know, being institutionalized for what he's recorded and for what nobody believes, for the experiments that have been conducted upon him. And he's basically this poor sap who nobody listens to. And there's this just this incredible sense of pity for sort of for this character who's sort of dispossessed and stuff. And I mean, obviously he comes back in the fourth season and that plays out again. But I think over the course of the X-Files, repeatedly you have this idea of Mulder like engaging with people who are on the margins, who are disenfranchised. And I like that it's baked into the mythologies early as in Conduit, but also here in Max, where it's not even directly tied to his sister. It's just like Mulder feels sorry for this guy.
Absolutely. I mean, in Scott, what Scott Bellis does, he makes it a really kind of endearing performance. And he is quite memorable for kind of essentially the one-off character. I always felt they missed a trick by not having him in it at least a couple more times before essentially his death in season four, because I thought it would have created more impact. I guess just because obviously Mulder and Scully meet him here and you do feel sorry for him. But if you've missed, as a lot of people do come into it like later on, I started watching during early season two. So when I first saw him pre-appear in season four and essentially his death, I didn't know who the character was. I think it would have been really good, and maybe the Lone Gunmen took over here, but I think it was a shame because Scott Best was so good in the role that he didn't get to have a go one or two more times before that season four appearance.
He really is. And I mean, even that introductory scene where he's in the cage with Mulder and he's just talking as fast as he can. And he does that little thing where he talks about, you know, firm handshake, look right in the eye. And you get a sense that like he's memorized social cues and stuff. Like he doesn't really fit in with people. And there's something like, it's an amazing performance and it's a fascinating character. And I think like it's telling that he did come back in the fourth season and that he left a mark, as you noticed with the Lone Gunman, but also just in the type of characters who get caught in the crossfire of what's happening. I think it's really, really good.
I think the other thing that was interesting about this one as well is the pace is kind of seeing Mulder and Scully, because I mean, it's a similar thing happened with Deep Throat when Mulder goes off on his own and Scully has to come to the rescue. But she's still very much a kind of by the book character at this point. But you do kind of see, even in this fast pace, her passion and them working together, and actually how she will go, even though she starts she doesn't even appear for the first act, does she? When she does finally turn up, she fully believes the cover story. She's willing to get him back to Washington for the hearing. But then as the story unfolds, she gets neck deep right in the action. She helps at the hospital. And then she's there helping Mulder at the end as well. She's standing up to the military, which is it's nice kind of little play with their relationship, even this early on, where you get to see them tested.
And I do. I even like the idea that the cover story that she's given, like she's told a classified cover story that's a fallen Libyan fighter jet with a nuclear missile, which is like, it's unbelievable of itself, but it's somehow unbelievable and more rational, so Scully can go with it. Like, I think that in the first season, you had a bit more of that, a bit more of an attempt to justify how Scully could believe that aliens weren't involved. And I think that Fallen Angel does that quite well. I love the direction as well. Like, there's a lot of... This is the first time I've watched these episodes on Blu-ray in high definition, and with the first season there's a sense of like this really gritty sort of like, later on it becomes more polished, but in the first season there's sort of like almost a video nasty feel to it. Like the camera moving along the ground sort of reminds me almost of the Evil Dead, and the shot of the alien ship, which is obviously done in a budget, looks like the shark fin from Jaws sticking up out of the ground. I really like that gritty sort of sweaty Vancouver quality to it that, you know, as the series becomes more polished and more stylish, you sort of lose. This looks like, you know, it looks amazing, but it also looks like it was shot on sort of a handheld camera and you know, improvised and sort of, you know, just whatever we can get away with on the budget. It's really, really impressive.
And that's what's really good about it. It's basically a big high budget episode. It's without the budget. You've got a crashed UFO, you've got an alien turning through the woods, killing people left, right, and center, maybe trying to hunt it down. This is a big, you can imagine on the budget these days, you'll have huge amount of special effects. But I actually love that kind of zooming camera around between like the Evil Dead meets Predator kind of feel to it. It's kind of fun. It does keep the pace up as well.
And it's a much better invisible monster than the one that shows up in Fear for Symmetry, I would argue.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it works because you don't see it.
Yeah, I think it does as well. All right, then, will we move on to the second episode then?
Absolutely, yeah.
Talk a little bit about Eve.
I love Eve, sorry.
All about Eve.
See, again, this is one, I mean, I kind of remember Fallen Angel being good, and I think it is one of the better season one episodes. But I've always kind of really surprised by Eve. It's one of the ones, when I was rewatching them for the Digital Fix, while I was revisiting the series, I didn't cover every episode. I nearly missed Eve, but I'm really glad I did, because there's some really great stuff going on. There's really great stuff going on in this episode. I mean, I love that it kind of keeps you always on its toes, and you know, it's great performances. And to be honest, evil kids are brilliant, and the girls in this are really evil. And that's what I love about it.
I like Eve a lot. My big issue with Eve, so to speak, is the fact that it feels like exposition in need of a plot. Like if you think about what actually happens in the episode. Mulder and Scully go to places, they get told things, they go to other places, they get told things, they take kids, the kids try to poison them, but the kids get captured, the end. Or maybe it isn't.
I think maybe it's performances in this one then. I do agree, this is quite simplistic, but again, a lot of X-Files could be quite simplistic in that manner. Maybe, and I guess that you have to have a certain suspension of disbelief with the whole kind of drinking the Diet Cokes at the end when they're trying to poison them. But I guess at the same time, I think there's a bit of fun to it as well between the performances, particularly with the girls, but also with the Doctor herself as well. I think it's brilliant.
Well, with the three adult Eves as well, which is remarkable for like trying to distinguish. And they are very distinguishable. The three different versions of the character are quite distinct from one another, which is very, very impressive. Because I know the girls are twins, obviously, and that's actually a very clever way of getting around the famous regulation that they have with children working in Hollywood after the disaster on The Twilight Zone, but where you can only work with children for certain hours a day. So one of the things they do to cast is they cast twins so they can swap them out midway through the day. But I like the use of twins here. They're very, very creepy. And again, you see that sort of 70s influence. Like, that's The Shining through and through, to the point where instead of wearing blue, they're wearing red at the climax, which I really, really like. I also like the sense, and this is like what we talked about earlier when we talked about like the mythology not being fully formed. Like, I think Eve is a hugely influential episode in terms of the X-Files that goes on. And I mean, you can say what you want about the project or whatever, but in terms of like themes and ideas, like the idea of cloned creepy children is just something the show comes back to again and again and again. Obviously, like Heron Vogue is a great example of that.
Yeah. So I kind of always thought this deserved a sequel or deserved some kind of, in one sense, I agree, it's quite simple and it's kind of hammy and fun and sort of evil kids and like a Bedlam style crazy side. I mean, it is all kind of a bit melodramatic at times, but I think there's a lot here. You know, you could this could have tied into the clones, it could tie into Super Soldiers, Project Paperclip. There's lots of ways this could have gone, and I kind of feel it's just other human experimentation that could have been part of revisited in some form, particularly with the idea of the Adams as well as the Eves. But I guess on its own, it's kind of a curious predecessor to those type of stories as well.
It is. And I mean, one of the things, the X-Files comic that was written by Topps in the mid-90s, I think the writer there, Stefan Petrucca, when he wrote one of the annuals, he wanted to revisit Eve. Like, he wanted to do Hollowed Eve that would feature Eve from the episode. But apparently he was vetoed. He was told that he could not, that they didn't want to go back to that in any way, shape or form, even in the tie-ins, which is a bit of a shame. I like the idea the X-Files conspiracy is so, like, so sort of spread out and so labyrinthine that there's all these dead ends and little cul-de-sacs that you could explore if you wanted to, but where the project goes in a million different directions in a million different ways, but you have this sort of like spindly vampire squid quality going on there. Like, you have like their fingers are in so many pies, but they're all brought back to sort of the same ideas, the exploitation of women, for example, the reproductive horror.
I guess the one thing I really liked about the episode as well, kind of moving away from the mythology, is that it does, even though it's quite simple in terms of Mulder and Scully learning what happens, what I do like about it is that it plays on what kind of story it is at first. You know, are these kids, well, sort of their dads, sorry, are they bitten by vampires, and suddenly there's abductions and exsanguination of cows, and suddenly you kind of don't know where the episode is going to go. And then, of course, you have Tina, who gets abducted in the middle of a stormy night as well. So I guess one thing I kind of really like about it as well is that you don't know from the beginning what kind of story it's going to be until a good like 20 minutes in.
And at the same time, though, it's still very much an X-File. It's still very much like a subject that's of interest to Carter. Like, there's a sense of that suburban horror, like the sort of stuff that he'd do in Millennium, like the idea of the family unit under attack. Like, there's this strain of Eve that I'm not entirely comfortable with, and it comes up again in the X-Files, I think, in season 8 as well. But this idea of, like, there's this, and this is when you're watching the show in the 90s, where they have the children are the result of in vitro fertilization, but you also have the doctor explain in great length what in vitro fertilization is for the audience at home.
Yes. You get, was it Mulder telling, yeah, the doctor telling Scully about it. And he goes, well, Scully obviously knows what it's about. Yeah.
Being a doctor and having discussed it in the previous scene.
That happens all the time in every kind of show. Even like if it's like Criminal Minds, they talk about psychology. Obviously, they know that because that's what they do for a living. It's a classic case of turn the audience.
Yeah, you want to think that they've been studying this for 4 to 10 years. They know what, like, in vitro fertilization or narcissism is. Like, you stop and just heard the doctor turn the camera going, that goes for you at home as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
But do you think that the show is afraid of in vitro fertilization? That it's afraid of... Do you think there's a sort of a reactionary strand there with regards to how the show handles stuff? Like, even in the 8th season when it comes to Scully's baby, like, when there's a suggestion that it was a result of in vitro fertilization, there's a result of the embryos being tampered with or swapped.
Well, that's it. Per Manum has basically given birth to aliens, and it is that kind of, I don't know. I guess it's difficult to tell from our point of view of today because it's kind of a standard part of science. But I guess going back when it was probably not new, but it was less known to the public, I think there's a kind of curiosity about it. But I guess maybe because there's a lot of horror in the X-Files, they kind of try and attribute what they class as almost like fringe type science to horror, which is, yeah, it's a bit of an odd message sometimes, I think. I think there is definitely that the two stories that have really dealt with it, which is this and the Per Manum, both end up with either killer kids or aliens. And it's kind of,
it's like there's apparently a right way to have a kid, which is a very sort of 90s sentiment and hasn't aged particularly well. Speaking of things that haven't aged particularly well, one of the things I like watching the first season is the sense of like the Cold War hanging over it, basically. Like, there's a sense that in Fallen Angel, obviously, like, they're a reclamation team that recovered fallen, you know, US equipment in the Cold War that have now been turned to hunt down aliens. And in Eve, it's a Cold War experiment that began with the Russians and stuff. And it's really weird because as you go on, the show sort of shifts its focus to the Second World War. But the first season is very much like, well, the Cold War just ended, so yeah, we should probably talk about that a lot. I like the idea that in the First World War, there's a sense that almost the aliens are like space Russia. It's like the United States is going to be engaged in some sort of secret clandestine warfare with the supernatural. And I really like how that fits together.
I guess there's a couple more I want to talk about this episode as well before we finish as well. The first one is, it is so ridiculously over top, but I love the Victorian style Bedlam facility when they meet the A's, to the point when she actually bit out his tongue and it's so
into his eyeball. She meant it as a gesture of affection.
But I forget her name of the actress.
It is Erica Krivens, who actually... Oh, sorry, no, it's Harriet Harris.
I love Harriet Harris. I mean, I loved her in Frasier when she was Bebe, the kind of crazy agent as well. And I think what I like about it is she plays the doctor quite straight. But when you see the kind of the crazy one in the asylum, but in the eyeball, it's so hammy. But it feels too ridiculous even for the X-Files, but it's kind of a lot of fun as well. The other thing that I found quite amusing about this episode, watching it again as well, was the whole scene when Mulder does his slideshow and exaggerated cows. I'm thinking, has he been waiting for the opportunity to show Scully a slideshow of exaggerated cows? When would this happen in real life? But it just kind of struck me as quite amusing as well.
And he gets to wheel it out again in Bad Blood.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. I think Mulder's exaggerated cow slideshow must be one of his passions, I guess.
It's right in there with the adult videos. It's like Scully goes rooting to the closet and she's like, I don't know which one of these is weirder or more inappropriate.
Yeah, I enjoy the episode. I say it is a bit ridiculous, but I think... anything with kind of evil kids generally kind of works for me anyway.
And it's very atmospheric and it's very rich and it is very much an X-Files episode. I think that it does suffer for a bit from that sort of first season sort of gangliness, doughiness. But it is, and it's memorable. It's visually memorable as well because the kids dressed in red trying to murder people, they'll always get you.
Absolutely. Coming after Space, I think Fallen Angel and Eve are two really good episodes at the midpoint of season one.
They really are. All right then. So with that in mind, then we'll conclude today's podcast, or pod watch, if you will. With that in mind, you can follow the XCast on Twitter at @X_cast. You can join us at the X Files page and group, which is the XCast X Files podcast fan group. There's a lot of great discussion going on there. You can Twitter at us, follow us, listen to us on iTunes, rate us, review us, forward to, on, share. If you like it, tell everyone. If you don't like it, tell us. We'll be back tomorrow with episode 7, covering Fire and Beyond the Sea, which is actually quite a study in contrast, that, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
Take it easy, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.